Okay, welcome everybody. So glad you could make it here tonight. I'm going to say a little prayer. Thank you, Father, for bringing us here. Thank you for this opportunity. I ask that you guide my words and that you open the hearts and the minds of these participants, that they may hear something that they need to hear. I ask that you allow us all to focus on the circle and the triangle and what we're talking about today. Thank you for your grace and your power in our lives. In your name we pray. Amen. All right. So welcome, welcome. Tonight we're going to be talking about the first assignment, which is the preface, the four words, and the circle and the triangle. I wanted to bring a few things up before we start. The importance of the homework groups, and I would want you guys to do anything and everything you can to make your homework group. It is as important, if not more important, than coming here and listening to me. That's where we're going to make connections. That's where you're going to enable us to get to know you, and that's going to give us the ability to really help you with a thorough inventory and with the fifth step and with the amends process. And as we move forward, we'll focus our energy on those that come to our groups and are present. It's pretty magical as you move forward, and you can really build some lifelong relationships. So I would hope that each and every one of you would experience that. Another thing I want to bring up is that I discussed with one of the participants, Brandon, that we're going to open this meeting up to anybody that needs prayer. So I want you guys to contemplate it. It doesn't have to be about alcoholism or drugs. It could be about anything in life, anything you're going through, any struggles you're having. Brandon and I, if need be, we'll open the meeting up at 5:30 and we'll invite you in and we will gladly pray over you. So all you need to do is send me a text, call me, let me know ahead of time, and then I'll let Brandon know, and we would be more than happy to pray for anybody, for anything. That kind of came to us in a little conversation that we were having. So, and then the last thing I want to remind each and every one of you is that I'm just like you. I'm doing this for one reason only, so that I don't get loaded. That is the reason why I started this workshop. I'm a firm believer in what we're going to talk about tonight, how important this portion of my recovery is. I told myself 6 months ago that if somebody doesn't ask me to take them through the work, I'm going to start a workshop. And here we are today. So that's how this came about. That's why I'm here. And lastly, please don't ever put me on any kind of pedestal. I'm by no means a spiritual giant. I'm as sick or more sick than anybody here. I suffer from the same disease, and once an alcoholic and addict, always an alcoholic and addict, and I need this just as much as anybody. So please remember that, and I would just hope that all of us could learn to lift each other up. I think it's very, very important going through this process. So all that being said, we're going to open our books to the very first page that we transcribed on. You guys can kind of read along with me. That way you know right where I'm at. So the first thing they asked us to transcribe in our book was the set-aside prayer. Now, the set-aside prayer will become very important as we go through this process. And depending on how you proceed, it can become one of the most important aspects of prayer in your life. The set aside prayer says, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me to see the truth about dot, dot, dot. So I'm going to utilize that set aside prayer prior to each meeting that we have. It will go in line with the assignment that we're on and right where we're at. But I do use it for many things in my life, and I encourage each and every one of you to utilize it for anything and everything. The ability to set aside what I think I know for an open-minded and new experience, I cannot do on my own. My ideas are old. They are ingrained. They are principles. They've been the driving force of my life. So now I'm looking for something to guide me, and that's why I ask God to please enable me. Please enable me to set aside everything I think I know. Otherwise, it would be impossible, because a lot of the times I think I know everything. So tonight we're going to say, help me to see the truth about this book, these meetings, the 12 steps, and my disease. And we'll touch on a little bit of that tonight. So we're looking for some truth that we are unable to come to terms with on our own power. That's essential, that realization, the understanding that I am completely and utterly unable to come to this realization on my own power. If I could do that, I would not need recovery or you guys. The blessing in that is that I get to experience the power of God in my life, which has been wonderful. So we also transcribe step one, where it says my physical craving after I start to take a drink. Now, I understand that this is an all affliction workshop, so please feel free, when I say alcohol and drugs, to substitute it with whatever affliction you may be suffering from. We're looking at the physical craving after we engage. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at the physical craving, the wanting for more and more and more. And then we're also going to look at my mental obsession before I start to drink or drug or whatever's going on in my life that I'm finding objectionable. And then we're looking at the unmanageability of my life. So we're about to talk about that in the triangle, that this is a threefold disease, this malady that's spiritual, this obsession that's mental, and this craving that's physical in my life. Those are the three parts of the disease that I'm suffering from. And then in step two, we're going to look at our need to come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And in step three, we're going to look at the failure of our lives run on self-will and our decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. So that kind of gives us an idea of the first three steps. So as we turn the page, we get to the title page. At the top, we wrote general information about AA. It's the title page through page Roman numeral 24, I believe that is. So general information about this program, we're going to find from this page up until the end of the foreword. And then we wrote the first promise of hope. We open this book up. Right away, we get the very first promise of hope, and it says, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Recovered from alcoholism. Beautiful promise. Something to contemplate as you go through this process. Do you feel as if you have recovered? So right under the fourth edition there, it says the symbol below was removed from the big book in the middle of 1994 because of copyright complications. So from 1939 to 1994, the circle and triangle were printed in the front of the big book. After 1994, it took it out. The fourth edition came out in 2000. So the majority of us don't have a big book with the circle and triangle in the front. Keep in mind that it was there for more time than it hasn't been there. So we put it back there. That's why we transcribed this circle and triangle. What is a circle and triangle? The circle and triangle is also an ancient spiritual symbol, meaning mind, body, and spirit together as one. So we're looking at our mind, our body, and our spirit on equal parts of our life working together as one so that we can reach this recovered state. So that we can recover from this seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. So let's talk about the body. The body is the unity. What is the unity? The unity is found in our fellowship, a set of 12 spiritual principles in the 12 traditions, page 562, 566. Do I have a group that I'm committed to? So something to consider in the unity portion of the triangle, and a lot of us went over it in our homework groups either last night or the night before, so it's fresh on our minds. Do you have a group that you're committed to? Do you have a home group? What does a home group mean? What does committed to mean? To me, that means that I am going there no matter what, every week, unless some unforeseen circumstances arise. I'm sick, something with the family, car trouble. But aside from that, I am there. It would not be fair for me to say I have a home group and I'm only there twice a month. And the thing about this circle and triangle is we cannot fake this. This is a measuring stick. This is a summary of where we are at in Alcoholics Anonymous, where we are at in recovery. Are you building a fellowship? Are we reaching out to people? Do we have a small group of people that we trust, that we talk to? See, this is our body. This is our body portion of the triangle, the unity. The first tradition says that personal recovery depends upon AA unity. What does that mean? My personal recovery is dependent upon AA unity as a whole. Without the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're not sitting here tonight. It is that important. One of the areas that I lack is in the, I isolate. That's one of my big defects of character. The beauty of a homework group is that we get to get honest and we get to talk about where we are falling short in these areas. Very, very important. So we'll talk about the recovery. And the recovery is the mind. So my illness is body, mind, and spirit. We just talked about the body, the unity. Now we're talking about recovery, the mind. And it says it was found in the big book, pages Roman numeral 25 to page 164. Set of 12 spiritual principles is the 12 steps, page 59 and 60. Have I continued to actively work the 12-step process outlined in the AA Big Book. What does my recovery look like? All of you have obviously made a commitment to join a workshop to take this journey of 12 steps, which is wonderful. Asking ourselves the question, am I continuing to actively work the 12 steps is a whole nother animal. It's a whole nother issue. I could come to the workshop. I could write down some inventory. I could make confession to somebody and make a couple amends and still not be actively working the 12-step process. So it's important for us to look at what the 12-step process means. And it's important for us to have an experience with the 12-step process as outlined in the AA Big Book. We talked about reading pages 84 through 88 every morning. That is a, I wouldn't call it a must, but it is a, it's a very heavily leaned on suggestion in the Big Book Awakening process of the 12 steps. So that's a question for each and every one of us to ask ourselves. Are we reading those pages each day? Are we taking quiet time to acknowledge the presence of the God of our own understanding? Are we sitting in the morning and setting aside some time for this relationship that we've been told is the solution? What does our recovery really look like? This is important because remember, we can't fake it. So we write down a lot of do I believe as we're going to go through this process. And that's something for all of us to ask ourselves tonight. Do I believe in this unity, service, recovery, circle, and triangle? Do I believe that it is of utmost importance for me to recover? Then we have the service portion of the triangle, which is our spirit. Now, we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and we've all heard the service commitments, which are great. What I have learned in the last few years is that those service commitments are actually part of my unity. So I need to have commitments. I need to have a home group. I need to fellowship with all of you, or a few of you, as long as it's honest and real. If that's the case, what does service mean? So the service is our spirit. It's found in carrying the message. It's a set of 12 spiritual principles. It's the 12 concepts, page 574 to 575. Am I working with other alcoholics, taking them through the 12 steps? Now, of course, if you're new to this process and you haven't been through the entire 12-step process, then of course you're not taking somebody through the work. But this is definitely something to contemplate. This is definitely something to walk towards. And I would ask each and every one of you kind of a rhetorical question, but are you willing to go out and work with somebody as soon as this is over? Because that's what this is about. That's what this is about. And so if I'm new, again, this is a measuring stick, especially for new people. This is virtues that I'm going to strive for. What does your service in life look like? Can I go out of my way in the meantime to be of service to people around me that I wouldn't normally be of service to? Let's take a look at that. Because I want my triangle to be whole. Altruistic service to other human beings, I think, makes God smile more than anything. It's the greatest expression of love and compassion that we can do. So If we're not, hold on. If we're not in a place to take somebody through the steps, then let's focus on being of real service to people around us as much as we possibly can, with an open heart and an open mind and an attitude of compassion and understanding. If we've been through the work and we're sitting here in a workshop and we're not working with somebody else, why? Why? That's a question for you to answer. It's not a judgment thing. This is something that we're discussing about being whole. This is something that we all are looking for, a little bit of a deeper and more wonderful experience with recovery. I promise you that this will enhance your relationship with God. It will enhance your relationship with your fellows, and it will also enhance your own recovery. So if I have a home group, if I have commitments, if I've been through these steps and I'm not taking anybody through the work, then let me take a look at my unity. Let me take a look at, am I reaching out? Am I asking new people if they need help? Am I waiting for somebody to come and approach me? I learned that the hard way, and that's how I was taught. If it's God's will, they're going to come and ask you, and then you take them through the steps. Well, I went out and drank. And that's why I just shared with you guys earlier that 6 months ago, I said to myself and to my wife, if I don't start working with someone, I'm going to start a workshop. I don't even know what that looks like. I've never done one. I just have to do this. So the circle and the triangle, the unity, the service, and the recovery. If AA is the meetings, the 12 steps outlined in the big book, and working with others, taking them through the steps, where am I in AA? There's a promise. So that's a real question for all of us, Dan. Where am I in Alcoholics Anonymous? Where am I? If action is taken in all three areas, I can be whole. Well, I'm going to change that to action must be taken in all three areas if I want to be whole. Action must be taken in all three areas if I want to be whole. You see, I'm going to become this vessel and this channel for this power that I'm trying to tap into or gain access to or give access to myself. There's action that must be taken. And as I'm taking action in all of these areas, boy, does God ever show up. It really does. And so this combined with finding out who we are, finding out who we're not, making restitution to people that we have harmed, confessing, gaining some integrity, surrendering to a power that we either didn't believe in or have never truly relied upon, God's going to show up. And that word recovered is going to shine for us. So if we put a little dot in the center of that triangle, that's God. We've got our circle, we've got our triangle, God's in the center. I want to be whole. The way that I can be whole in this process and this program is that I must take action in all three areas. So as we leave this, we're left with some questions, and we went over them in our groups, and just be sincere about them with yourself. As I go through this, I'm going to give you my interpretation of text. I'm going to share my experience with text. But ultimately, this is about your interpretation and your experience, not about mine. This is about yours. So we have three areas of our disease: physical, mental, and spiritual. We have three legs of our triangle: mind, body, spirit. In the center of that is the power of God. And in order to experience that, I must take action in all three areas. It's a good thing to revisit as we go through this process, when we're done with this process, as we move forward in recovery. Where are we at in AA? It's a great question. Okay, so we're going to turn the page and we go to the table of contents. And it says, this is a textbook meant to be done in order. This outlines where each step is found in the big book. So a lot of us have been through the book and a lot of us know, some of us don't. And remember, this transcription, we want it to be legible. We are going to utilize this as a tool for the service portion of our triangle to walk from here and go directly to taking somebody through this work. So we have the preface, which is general information, which we're going to go over this evening. We have the forward to the first edition, forward to the second, forward to the third, forward to the fourth. Then we have the doctor's opinion, which is step one. We have Bill's story, which is the physical craving in the body, and the doctor's opinion, page 23. There is a solution, it's our mental obsession, the mind, page 23 to 43. More about alcoholism. We've got mental obsession, the mind. We agnostics, we've got unmanageability, the spirit. Page 44, 45, 52. Step two, how it works. We have step three and step four. Into action, we have steps 5 through 11. Working with others is an entire chapter. On step 12, carrying the message. Then we have to the wives, the family afterward, to the employers, the vision for you. Now, when we go through this work, we're going to stop after working with others. I think it's about page 104. But I encourage each and every one of you, if we turn back, it says that the program of recovery is found from page Roman numeral 25 to page 164. So we've got four chapters: to the wives, the family afterward, to employers, and a vision for you. When this workshop is over, I highly encourage you to go through each one of those chapters. You can do the same thing. Do your own transcription. Make your own questions. And I make myself available to each and every one of you if you want to sit down and go through any one of those chapters. If you've got a family in this disease that you've harmed, that chapter 9 is wonderful. If you've hurt your spouse, or if you're an Al-Anon and you're the wife of a drug addict or an alcoholic, then chapter 8 is really good. To the employers, if you happen to employ people that are alcoholics or drug addicts. And then a vision for you kind of sums up exactly what it says, what the first 100's vision for us is. It's got a good story about how Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson met and a couple of turning points in their journey. And then after that, we've got our 42 personal stories. Gives you pages. That's why I recommended each and every one of you get the full version of the big book. It has all the stories in it. When we move forward and we get to our second step and we start really leaning heavily on this solution and surrender to this power of God, it's going to look different for each and every one of us. It's going to be scary for some of us. It might incite anger and prejudice and judgment, and it might become very uncomfortable for some of us. Those stories are stories about 42 people that came into this program that either thought they had a relationship with God and could not stop drinking, thought they never could have a relationship with God and built one, or didn't believe in the power of God at all and had this profound experience. That's what those stories are for. When they first started this program, they did not have meetings. They mailed this book to people all over the country. The only thing people had to relate to was those stories in the back. So, and the reason I say that is just to let you know how important they have been in the past. And they've also really touched me. There's a few of them that really personal to me. So check it out. Okay, so now we're going to go to the preface. And some of this will seem kind of boring or redundant or useless information, so I'll try to make it as interesting as I can. It's all interesting to me because it's about this program that saved my life, that's restored my family, that's given me another chance. So I love it. So we wrote on the top, this is more than a book designed to transmit information. It's a book designed to transmit an experience sufficient enough to enable me to recover. I need more than knowledge to stay sober for good. So our goal here is to have an experience. That's why I mentioned how important it is for you to have your own experience, your own interpretation. That's why the questions that we answer are so important. That's why opening up to a small group of people and getting really honest is so important. Because we begin to have a real experience, and we also begin to see that we're not alone and we're not the only ones. That helped me out. Okay. So this is the fourth edition of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The first edition appeared in April of 1939. And in the following 16 years, more than 300,000 copies went into circulation. The second edition, published in 1955, reached a total of more than 1,150,500 copies. The third edition, which came off press in 1976, achieved a circulation of approximately 19,550,000 in all formats. Because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left largely untouched. And we have an asterisk we wrote there. This tells me that the first part of the book is where the AA recovery program is. So we'll hear how they've changed some of the stories, how they've added some appendixes over time, but they have not changed the program of recovery. They haven't changed the words. They haven't changed the way it was laid out. They haven't changed the order of the steps. They haven't changed the solution. It's all remained the same. Largely untouched in the course of revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions. the section called the doctor's opinion has been kept intact, just as it was originally written in 1939 by late Dr. William D. Silkworth, our society's great medical benefactor. The second printing of the first edition added the appendix, Spiritual Experience. In the second edition, the appendices of AA tradition and the medical view and religious view of AA, the Lasker Award, and information on how to contact AA were added. And the appendix on the Alcoholic Foundation was discontinued. But the chief change was in the section of personal stories, which was expanded to reflect the fellowship's growth. Bill's story, Dr. Bob's nightmare, and one other personal history from the first edition were retained intact. Three were edited, and one of these was retitled. New versions of two stories were written with new titles. 30 completely new stories were added, and the story section was divided into three parts under the same headings that are used now. In the third edition, part one, Pioneers of AA, was left unchanged. Nine of the stories in part two, They Stopped in Time, were carried over from the second edition. Eight new stories were added. In part three, they lost nearly all. Eight stories were retained. Five new ones were added. So in our personal stories, we've got sections. We've got Pioneers of AA. So if you're an old timer and you've been around a long time and you're interested in the Pioneers of Alcoholics Anonymous and how they recovered, check out one of those stories. Part two, They Stopped in Time. That's my section. They stopped in time. They didn't end up in jail. They didn't have a DUI. They didn't kill anybody in their car. They've never even had handcuffs on, but they find themselves in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stopped in time. There's nine stories that reflect that for me. It's beautiful. It's helped me so much. And they nearly lost all. The low bottom drunk, drug addict, whatever affliction you're suffering from, everything fell apart. I've lost all. How do those people find a solution? How do those people connect with the power of God? Read one of those stories. You'll find out. That's the point. That's why they're there. And they've changed over time because society changes over time. People change over time. I believe they need to keep it somewhat relatable for us to engage and be a little bit interested. So the fourth edition includes the 12 concepts for world service and revises the three sections of personal stories as follows. One new story has been added to part one, and two that originally appeared in part two have been repositioned there. Six stories have been deleted. Six of these stories in part two have been carried over. 11 new ones have been added and 11 taken out. Part two now includes 12 new stories. Eight were removed in addition to the two that were transferred to part one. All changes over the years in the Big Book, AA members' fond nickname of this volume, have had the same purpose, to represent the current membership of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately, and thereby to reach more alcoholics. If you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, yes, this happened to me. More important, yes, I felt like that. Or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. Very important question. We're going to carry those questions all the way through this book, not just in the 42 personal stories. Our goal is to have a personal experience with this text and this work and this program and these people. Well, yes, did that happen to me? Did I feel like that? Do I believe this program will work for me? Thorough and honest internal answers to those questions will generate an experience with this work and also a desire to continue. And also, there's a level of honesty here, and God bless you if you get to a spot and you're saying, no, that didn't happen to me, and I didn't feel like that. Maybe I don't belong here. Maybe you're not an alcoholic. I don't know. But it's very important to relate. So we've got three simple questions to ask ourselves this whole journey. Did it happen to me? Did I feel like that? And then most important, do I really believe that this is going to work for me? Do I believe that? That's something we have to sit with. That's something I have to revisit all the time. All the time. Because if I don't believe that it's going to work for me, then I'm definitely not going to do this work. And I'm surely not going to find a solution in the midst of misery while I'm sober, when I'm going through it. So that's our preface. So now we're going to read the foreword to the first edition. The first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous came out in 1939. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So 100 people finally got together as this movement grew over a few states, and they decided to write a book. Why did they want to write a book? Because they were recovered. They could not stop on their own. They were suffering. They were dying. So to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. The purpose of this book is to show us precisely how they have recovered. That means there's going to be a lot of must. There's going to be suggestions. There's going to be directions. There's going to be a process because the word precisely tells me that they're not going to vaguely tell me what this is about or vaguely describe the power of God when it comes to the solution. They're going to precisely tell me how to heal, how to recover. So for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. That's why this workshop is open to all afflictions. Big Book Awakening has enlightened me. I've always had this inkling that this process would work for anybody for anything. Because the power of God is immense and universal. And if I am selfish enough to say it's only for my drinking and drugging, not only am I limiting the power of God, but I'm excluding people that are suffering from the exact same problem I am. The substance doesn't matter, and we'll learn that as we move forward. And it says, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. So take that into consideration. If you're carrying around prejudice about this is only for alcoholics, or if you're carrying around prejudice about all of a sudden I'm sitting in a room full of alcoholics and I'm not an alcoholic, or whatever it may be, just consider that. It's important that we remain anonymous because we are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals which may result from this publication. Being mostly business or professional folk, we could not well carry on our occupations in such an event. We would like it understood that our alcoholic work is an avocation. When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to admit his personal name, designating himself instead as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very earnestly, we ask the press also to observe this request, for otherwise we shall be greatly handicapped. We have an asterisk at the bottom there that says, not our way to quit drinking, our way of living, to stay sober for good. So that's what has its advantages for all, our way of living. We are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Now, if you've been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you've been to a lot of meetings, you have heard them say time and time and time again, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Why did they remove the word honest? I don't know. Why did our founders write the word honest? The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Something to contemplate. I don't know. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted. You shall be interested to hear from those who are getting results from this book, particularly from those who have commenced work with other alcoholics. We should like to be helpful to such cases. Inquiry by scientific, medical, and religious societies will be welcomed. So that's the foreword to the first edition, written in 1939. Now we'll read the foreword to the second. This page talks about growth in AA from 1939 to 1955. AA grew to 150,000 members in 16 years. So this is the foreword to the second edition. Since the original foreword to this book was written in 1939, a wholesale miracle has taken place. Our earliest printing voiced the hope that every alcoholic who journeys will find the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. Already, continues the early text, twos and threes and fives of us have sprung up in other communities. 16 years have elapsed between our first printing of this book and the presentation in 1955 of our second edition. In that brief space, Alcoholics Anonymous has mushroomed into nearly 6,000 groups whose membership is far above 150,000 recovered alcoholics. Groups are to be found in each of the United States and all of the provinces in Canada. AA has flourishing communities in the British Isles, Scandinavian countries, South Africa, South America, Mexico, Alaska, Australia, and Hawaii. All told, promising beginners have been made in some 50 foreign countries and U.S. possessions. Some are just now taking shape in Asia. Many of our friends encourage us by saying that this is but a beginning, only the augury of a much larger future ahead. Prediction. The spark that was to flare to the first AA group was struck in Akron, Ohio in June 1935 during a talk between a New York stockbroker, which is Bill Wilson, and the Akron physician, which is Dr. Bob Smith. 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend. So our asterisk says there, Ebby Thatcher, the old school friend, comes to Bill in his story on page 8, paragraph 4. And we'll read about that when we get to Bill's story. Bill, or Ebby, had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. He had also been greatly helped by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages. From this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism, though he could not accept all the tenets, the principles of the Oxford group. He was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession, personal defects, restitution, personality defects, restitution to those harms, helpfulness to others, the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. And our asterisk says, Bill could not accept complete deflation of ego, the first tenet of the Oxford group described on page 263. So we have to take into consideration, this book is taking off and Alcoholics Anonymous is growing and growing and growing. But in this foreword to the second edition, they're giving us a little bit of history of how it came about. And at this point, they didn't have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had six tenets from the Oxford group. That's what Bill and Dr. Bob got sober on. That was the basis of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if I turn to page 263, it's one of the personal stories. It's called He Sold Himself Short. And the six tenets that our founders got sober on was number one, complete deflation. Number two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Number three, moral inventory. Number four, confession. Number five, restitution. Number six, continue work with other alcoholics. Those are called the six precepts. From 1935 to 1939, 4 years of recovery for Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob Smith, the first 100, they had no 12 steps. They had six precepts. Just a fun fact. So, prior to his journey to Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only an alcoholic could keep an alcoholic, could help an alcoholic, but he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear that he might start drinking again. He suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. That alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician. So, Bill called Dr. Bob after a business venture fell through instead of drinking. Thank God he did. That was the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. So he called Dr. Bob. Now this is talking about Dr. Bob. The physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered never to drink again up to the moment of his death in 1950. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. And our asterisk says, unless they understood the problem, the solution didn't work. So Dr. Bob was a very spiritual man, very religious, a surgeon, could not stop drinking. Going to Jesus to help him, to stop the drinking, to stop the madness for years, and he could not do it. Bill Wilson shared with him the information he got from Dr. Silkworth, which we're going to talk about next week, about his physical allergy and this mental obsession that he suffers from. That gave Dr. Bob the ability to stop being so hard on himself, to understand that he is different than his fellows, mentally and physically, to take that to the God of his understanding. And he didn't have another drink till the day he died. So it's important for us to understand our problem so that we can walk towards the solution, to really, really understand. Takes the heat off a little bit too. So it also indicated that strenuous work with one alcoholic with another was a vital permanent recovery. So the work in AA is not only the steps, it's taking people through the steps. It's reminding us how vital to our permanent recovery taking somebody through the steps is. So, imperative. Hence the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving in the ward of Akron City Hospital. The very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately and became AA number three. He never had another drink. This work at Akron continued through the summer of 1935. There was many failures. There was an occasional heartening success. When the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been formed, though no one realized it at the time. A second small group promptly took shape in New York to be followed in 1937 with the start of a third at Cleveland. Besides these, there were scattered alcoholics who had picked up the basic ideas in Akron and New York who were trying to form groups in other cities. By late 1937, the number of members having substantial sobriety time behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholic. It was now time, the struggling groups thought, to place their message and unique experience before the world. This determination bore fruit in the spring of 1939 by the publication of this volume. The membership had then reached about 100 men and women. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, now began to be called Alcoholics Anonymous from the title of its own book. The flying blind period ended, and AA entered a new phase of its pioneering time. With the appearance of the new book, a great deal began to happen. Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, the noted clergyman, reviewed it with approval in the fall of 1939. Fulton Orsler, then editor of Liberty, printed a piece in his magazine called Alcoholics and God. This brought a rush of 800 frantic inquiries into the New York office, which meanwhile had been established. Each inquiry was painstakingly answered. Pamphlets and books were sent out. Businessmen traveling out of existing groups were referred to these prospective newcomers. New groups started up, and it was found, to the astonishment of everyone, that AA's message could be transmitted, in the mail as well as by word of mouth. By the end of 1939, it was estimated that 800 alcoholics were on their way to recovery. So we got to remember that they didn't have all these avenues to get this message out. And Fulton Orsler wrote an article in a magazine called Alcoholics and God. And back then, magazines were everything. It was the way people got their knowledge, and they were, compare it to social media today. And so this article just exploded this movement. It was the beginning of really getting the message out there. And then in the spring of 1940, John D. Rockefeller Jr. gave a dinner for many of his friends, to which he invited AA members to tell their stories. News of this got to the world wires. Inquiries poured in again, and many people went to the bookstores to get the book Alcoholics Anonymous. By March 1941, the membership had shot up to 2,000. Then Jack Alexander wrote a feature article in the Saturday Evening Post and placed such a compelling picture of AA before the general public that alcoholics in need of help really deluged us. By the close of 1941, AA numbered 8,000 members. The mushrooming process was in full swing. AA had become a national institution. So God's just making this thing grow. And that Saturday Evening Post picture is iconic, with AA number 3, Bill Wilson, and Dr. Bob by the hospital bed. And I'm sure you've seen it in meetings if you frequent Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Our society then entered a fearsome and exciting adolescent period. The test that it faced was this: could these large numbers of erstwhile erratic alcoholics successfully meet and work together? Would there be quarrels over membership, leadership, and money? Would there be strivings for power and prestige? Would there be schisms which would split AA apart? Soon AA was beset by these very problems on every side and every group. But out of this frightening and first disrupting experience, the conviction grew that AAs had to hang together or die separately. We had to unify our fellowship or pass off the scene. So this is the outline of the 12 traditions created to save our program. As we discovered the principles by which the individual alcoholic could live, so we had to evolve principles by which the AA groups and AA as a whole could survive and function effectively. It was thought that no alcoholic man or woman could be excluded from our society, that our leaders might serve but never govern, that each group was to be autonomous and there was to be no professional class of therapy. There were no dues or fees. Our expenses were to be met by our own voluntary contributions. There was to be the least possible organization, even in our service center. Our public relations were to be based upon attraction rather than promotion. It was decided that all members ought to be anonymous at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. And in no circumstance should we give endorsements, make alliances, or enter public controversies. This was the substance of AA's 12 traditions, which are still in full, stated in full on page 562 of this book. Though none of these principles had the force of rules or laws, they had become so widely accepted by 1950 that they were confirmed by our first international conference held at Cleveland. Today, the remarkable unity of AA is one of the greatest assets that our society has. While the internal difficulties of our adolescent period were being ironed out, public acceptance of AA grew by leaps and bounds. For this, there were two principal reasons: the large number of recoveries and reunited homes. They made their impressions everywhere. Reunited homes, that is super important, especially considering they call them two principal reasons. Homes were being ripped apart by alcoholism. And what they were recognizing is that homes were being reunited. That's my experience. My home was reunited through the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. These made their impressions everywhere. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Other thousands came to a few AA meetings and at first decided they didn't want the program, but great numbers of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. So 75% success rate is what the book's telling me. I don't necessarily know that that's the case today, but I do know that the fellowship I'm around today, I can say that I've seen that. I truly have seen that. It's been a miracle. I didn't think it was possible. I believe what they told me when I came in here and said that you got about a 10% chance to make it. And I have seen that turn into 75% before my own eyes in the last 5 years that I've been engaged with this particular fellowship. So pretty cool. Another reason for the wide acceptance of AA was the ministration of friends, friends in medicine, religion, and press together with innumerable others who became our able and persistent advocates. Without such support, AA could have made only the slowest progress. Some of the recommendations of AA's early medical and religious friends will be found further on in this book. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religious organization. Neither does AA take any particular medical point of view, though we cooperate widely with men of medicine as well as men of religion. Alcohol being no respecter of persons, we are an accurate cross-section of America. In distant lands, the same democratic evening up process is now going on. By personal religious affiliation, we include Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Hindus, and a sprinkling of Muslims and Buddhists. More than 15% of us are women. At present, our membership is pyramiding at the rate of about 20% a year. So far, upon the total problem of several million actual potential alcoholics in the world, we have made only a scratch. In all probability, we should never be able to touch more than a fair fraction of the alcohol problem in all its ramifications. Upon therapy for the alcoholic itself, we surely have no monopoly. So I'm not going to tell you that the 12 steps is the only way to recover. It's just the only way I know to recover. It's the only way I can share with you to recover. But AA does not have a monopoly on God nor the recovery process. Yet it is our great hope that all those who have as yet found no answer may begin to find one in the pages of this book and will presently join us on the high road to a new freedom. So that's what I would hope for each and every one of you, is that you can join me on this high road to this new freedom that I'm walking one day at a time. Okay, we got two more short forwards. I know it's kind of boring, but is what it is. This is the forward to the third edition. By March 1976, the edition went to the printer. Total worldwide membership of Alcoholics Anonymous was conservatively estimated at more than 1 million, with almost 28,000 groups meeting in over 90 countries. Surveys of groups in the United States and Canada indicate that AA is reaching out not only to more and more people, but to a wider and wider range. Women now make up more than one-fourth of the membership. Among newer members, the proportion is nearly one-third. 7% of AA surveyed are less than 30 years of age. Among them, many in their teens. The basic principles of the AA program, it appears, hold good for individuals with many different lifestyles. Just as the program has brought recovery to those of many different nationalities. The 12 steps that summarize the program may be called Los Doce Pasos in one country, Los Dos Estapes in another, but they trace exactly the same path to recovery that was blazed by the earliest members of Alcoholics Anonymous. In spite of the great increase in the size of the span of this fellowship, at its core, it remains simple and personal. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Forward to the fourth edition. This fourth edition of Alcoholics Anonymous came off the press in November 2001 at the start of a new millennium. Since the third edition was published in 1976, worldwide membership of AA has just about doubled to an estimated 2 million or more, with nearly 100,800 groups meeting in approximately 150 countries around the world. Literature has played a major role in AA's growth, and a striking phenomenon of the past quarter century has been the explosion of translations of our basic literature into many languages and dialects. In country after country where the AA seed was planted, it has taken root, slowly at first, then growing by leaps and bounds. When literature has become available, currently Alcoholics Anonymous has been translated into 43 languages. As the message of recovery has reached larger numbers of people, it has also touched the lives of a vastly greater variety of suffering alcoholics. When the phrase, "we are people who normally would not mix," page 17 of this book, was written in 1939, referred to a fellowship composed largely of men and a few women with quite similar social, ethnic, and economic backgrounds. Like so much of AA's basic text, those worlds have proved to be far more visionary than the founding members could have ever imagined. The stories added to this edition represent a membership whose characteristics of age, gender, race, and culture have widened and have deepened to encompass virtually everyone the first 100 members could have hoped to reach. While our literature has preserved the integrity of the AA message, sweeping changes in society as a whole are reflected in new customs and practices with the fellowship. Taking advantage of technological advances, for example, AA members with computers can participate in meetings online, sharing with fellow alcoholics across the country or around the world. In any meeting, anywhere, AAs share experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and to help other alcoholics. Modem to modem or face to face, AA speaks the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. And then we wrote, "Disease, a condition that separates me from health. Our sickness is physical, mental, and spiritual. Dis-ease. Middle English, discomfort, lack of ease." So we speak the language of the heart. And that's what we're trying to do here. make this journey from the mind to the heart, to learn to communicate with other people that are suffering, to share our experience, strength, and hope with them, to understand that this movement started almost 100 years ago, still alive and well today. Pretty awesome. That's it, man, for the forewords and the preface and the circle and the triangle. I stressed that all the way out to an hour and 20 minutes. So I'm going to give you guys the next assignment. The next assignment will be assignment 2 in your sponsorship guide. That's as simple as I can make it. Follow those directions to the T, and you will be right on track. I do want to reiterate the importance of the homework groups. Although we may see the size of our groups dwindle as we move forward, we will be here for each and every one of you that remain. And I would hope that each and every one of you get to your groups, have an experience, get some real fellowship, and learn what it means to truly be recovered, so that we can all ultimately do one thing, stick our hand out, carry this message to somebody else, and help somebody who is suffering. That's all this is about. So I'm going to do one thing real quick. I'm going to try something. Let me see if it works. Okay. I'm going to play something for you guys. Take us out.
Finding myself at a loss for words, and the funny thing is, it's okay. The last thing I need is to be heard, but to hear what you would say, word of God speak. You pour down like rain, washing my eyes to see your majesty, to be still and know that you're in this place. Please let me stay and rest in your holiness. Word of God, speak. Finding myself in the midst of you, beyond the music, beyond the noise. All that I need is to be with you, and in the quiet, hear your voice, word of God speak. Would you pour down like rain, washing my eyes to see your majesty, to be still and know that you're in this place. Please let me stay and rest in your holiness. Word of God, speak. Would you pour down like rain, it's okay.
All right. Let's say a prayer for you guys. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. Have a great week and get to your groups. I love each and every one of you. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks, Jason. Have a good night.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, everyone. Be safe.
Have a good week, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.